Greetings, dear, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Working Experience, a very warm, open-arm audio embrace and a squeeze. This episode is brought to you by my company, One Circle Media. One Circle Media is a hybrid digital agency and media content creator. We create and design apps, websites, videos, social media content, and physical products. We are artists, directors, designers, producers, coders, editors, thinkers, makers, and creators who embrace story and creativity from design, web and app development, animation, docs, features, TV shows, digital and social media content to physical products. For our clients, we create content that builds networks and audiences across multiple platforms. Check out our work at onecircledigital.com and onecirclebrand.com. If you work for a network, studio, brand, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I'd love to hear from you. This episode is also brought to you by an app that I created called Still Believe. Still Believe transforms a picture in your home into video proof of your child's favorite magical characters. With the app, parents can catch the magic of the Tooth Fairy, leaving money under their children's pillow, or Santa delivering presents on Christmas Eve in their home. You download the app, take a picture, and we create the magic. We utilize feature film visual effects artists to transform your picture into video. Just tell your kids that you have a special app that can detect and capture the Tooth Fairy, then present them with the video proof in the morning. The look on their faces is priceless. Your Still Believe video is created in minutes, and you can then save it to your phone and share it on social media. The app is available for the iPhone and Android, and it's free to download. Our aim is to bring joy and wonder into the hearts of children around the world. Check it out at stillbelieve.co. Thanks, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning. Snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks. We're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Dan, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
To stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
He was rubbing his
Sexual
toenails at his desk.
I
can't take it anymore.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Working Experience Podcast. This is Matty Kay.
And John, we are here again attempting to create some sort of, dare I say, impact on society with the Working Experience Podcast.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt of that.
I think we're systematically changing culture, people's minds. It's evolution.
I can't quantify this, but I've definitely felt a trend shift in some way, shape, or form. So
in what respect? Just meaning your everyday life? Is there everyone's giving you a nice slap on the back?
No, I mean people quitting their jobs and finding their fulfillment in life. I think we can take direct credit for that.
I think we can take direct credit for all the negative stuff.
Not looking for money. I'm not Tony Robbins. I'm not looking for money. It's
I am.
Eventually,
I'm figuring out how we can spin this and create something. And what I'm thinking now is we sell a keychain that
there you go.
You can rub for good luck. I think that'll work.
How about a keychain with like a mock key, and it says the key to the rest of your life?
I love it.
How's that?
Love it. Destiny. Your key of destiny.
Your key to destiny. See, folks, we didn't plan that. You probably think we wrote that, we scripted it. That just came right off the top of our heads.
No, that's talent right there.
That's just
pure talent.
Throwing it out there.
That right there is pure creation, like a star being born in the unbounded universe. That's what that was.
Well, speaking of which, John sent me this article. This is wanting your kid. I mean, of course, everybody wants their child to be the best. A lot of parents see their children as the best. Not my parents. They were kind of happy I was able at some point to get a job and move out of the house. That was like, wow. That was high marks for me, you know.
That was like akin to you setting foot on the moon.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, parents get very competitive. I mean, they get like, I was just a guy.
Now you can't, our listeners are listening to this, but when Maddie said, parents get very competitive, my hand rose immediately. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, this guy I work with, he's the baseball coach at the school, and he was talking about some parents, like the kid would come off the mound, and I know this kid, he's a really nice kid, really excellent pitcher, apparently, but he would come off the mound shaking if he felt like he didn't pitch well because his father was in the audience and would, I guess, really, you know, take him to task. And he obviously wasn't out there enjoying himself. He was really like, you know, it was tough.
Well, my youngest son's last basketball game.
Oh, it's got to be a nightmare with you there. It's got to be an absolute nightmare.
Well, I'm sitting on the sidelines and my son runs over and they're like, Dad, they need someone to do the clock, you know, operate the clock. I'm like, pfft. My first inclination, I'm like, no, I'm not doing it. And he's like, Dad, come on. He goes, you're the only one here that can do it. I'm like, fine. So I begrudgingly make my way over to the clock.
Now, wait, does this require some skill or something?
It actually does, because typically they'll have like a carry-on scoreboard, but this was the big scoreboard at a high school. Uh-huh. So like lots of buttons, lots of things to mess up. And you really have to pay attention to the game. You got to know who scored, blah, blah, all that stuff. So I'm sitting next to a dad who on the opposing team. So on the scoreboard, there's one guy who does the scoreboard, and then there's another guy who keeps the books. And it's got to be one dad from either team to keep it fair. Matt, the whole game, he's berating his child.
Oh, my God.
He's like, this kid cannot hit a barn door. Like, just the stuff that's, and he's like hitting me like I should agree with him. I'm like, dude, these are 12-year-olds playing basketball. This is not the NBA championship or March Madness. Just absolute, and he's telling me this and then would yell out to his kid and just like, it'd be like a timeout. And the kid would pass the scorer's table, and he'd be like, Jack, do something. He's like, score, Jesus. Dribble. He goes, you're useless.
You're
I'm
useless.
Like, Jesus.
Oh, that
Christ.
That's. I hope that kid bludgeons him to death.
It's only a matter of time before I read about these two in the newspaper.
Oh, my God. You're useless. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. Yeah, the parents can get really, really... I mean, and it just, like, has such a counteractive effect. Like, usually the kid ends up hating the sport, hating you, and just, you know, really... just let it go. You know, let it go.
Well, what happens is parents see themselves in their kids, like, and they take like a personal offense if the kid like messes up or can't, you know, put a round spherical ball in a basket. I mean, literally. Just really quick, two games ago, there was a dad I was sitting next to in the stands that was destroying his kid. Just absolutely destroying his kid, and then started destroying kids on our team. Like, would be like, oh, that kid walked. He go, what is this, Harding? You know, like Harding is one of the players in the NBA that constantly walks and never gets called on it.
Yeah.
Just spewing crap. And like typically not really competitive for these games. I just want the boys to have fun. But now I want our team to win just so this guy has to go home with the L. He's got to go home with the loss. We end up winning, and I pass this guy on the way out. And Matt, his entire night is destroyed. He's pissed at his kid. He's like, I don't. If I was in charge of him driving home, I would take his keys. Like, this guy was irate.
And I mean, about what? Like, is there nothing going on in your life that this?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
The only thing I would be mad about. I think the only thing my parents ever got mad at me when I was playing, like, I wasn't paying attention. Like, I was goofing around or, you know, and you know, afterwards they were like, look, if you're going to play, you got to pay attention. Like, even if you're sitting on the bench, like, stop goofing around. Like, other than that, how many, like, baskets I scored or whatever, like, it wasn't, you know, just like, you know, go out, do your best and, you know, have some
fun. Well, the important thing is to, not to win the game, not to score the most points, but to play as a team. Like, you want to work together and play as a team, whether you win or lose. I mean, I always say that, you know, the boys want to win, obviously. But, and the irony is if you play as a team and you're not a selfish player, you're not a ball hog, you usually win. Those the, you know, it's just the way it is.
Well, you know what? You can save that commie bullshit for Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. You guys can all play together, and everybody gets the same.
No medals. Yeah, everyone gets a medal. 10th place gets a medal.
Yeah, hey kids, it doesn't matter if we win or lose. Bullshit. What matters is you crush the other team. Okay, and if necessary, you crush your own teammates if it means you scoring more points. That's the lesson. Come on.
Well, this brings us, this is a good segue into the article we're going to discuss.
Okay, what inside I am looking at, oh, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
That's all right. Inside the cutthroat world of toddler bike racing.
Okay, I am looking at kids on bikes, toddlers. These kids look like what, they're 4? And
they might be 5.
One of them look, no.
One
no
kid's
way,
got a GoPro.
5. They're like 3 or 4.
One kid's got a GoPro.
Two kids.
A GoPro and a helmet. And what I love is there's like a starting gate that I guess will go down.
Yeah.
And one of the advertisers is Dannon Yogurt.
Right, right.
You got to get the sponsorship in there.
Look at number 132. She looks utterly dismayed at what it's about.
It looks like that kid looks like this is like a horse race and her dad just whipped her before the race.
Yeah.
And to make sure that she would win.
Number 151 does not look terribly enthusiastic. It looks like he's crying.
Yeah.
Oh, God, these parents. I mean, what new idiocy? Let's see. There's a video going around the internet of a balanced bike race in Japan. A long row of preschool-aged kids aboard low-slung bikes with no brakes or pedals. Takes off from the start ramp like a pack of greyhounds.
and this is taking place in Fort Worth, Texas. Gotta hand it to Texas. Gotta hand it to him.
Okay, so yeah, the one I just referenced started in Japan, or was in Japan. So apparently this is now spread to the United States. Here we go. A few kids don't make it. They splay out across the track in a pile of elbow and knee pads and full-face helmets. And then there's one kid coming from behind who executes a perfect pass on his recently potty-trained competitors and crosses line first, his chest forward in an elated victory celebration. God, this is really pathetic.
Oh, three-year-old. Jesus.
Yeah. Three-year-olds. And they're having them... why... I don't understand why everything has to be some sort of race. Like, everything...
Everything.
Has to be...
It's got to be a competition. And now it's getting younger and younger.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I really wish this was around when my boys were young, because I would have been, decked out in, like, all, like, the biking gear.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, and I'd be walking with, like, my biking shoes, the click, click. And I'd be like, listen, Aiden Connor, when you get out there.
God damn.
He's like, you take no prisoners.
That's right.
And I'd be having him, like, sabotage the bikes, letting the tires out of the air of their competitors before the race.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, there'd be money involved. You're trying to get a sponsorship.
Of course. Dan and Yogurt.
Yeah.
I'd have the boys, like, posing with pictures with the little Dannon cups.
And you're like, kids.
And the best thing is, my oldest son is allergic to dairy.
Doesn't matter.
I'd be like, Aiden, put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
Just eat this.
And hey, listen, if you don't win, we're not going to get the sponsorship from Dannon. You understand me?
Yeah, the whole family has, like, Dannon tchotchkes on, like, hats and slippers and flip-flops and shirts.
And you're like, you see Steven over there? Steven looks like a winner. Maybe I'll give the Dannon to Steven. How about that? Okay? He looks like he's going to cross the finish line first. All right? So maybe I'll go with him unless you step your game up. And all the other parents are just, like, really embarrassed. And then you're off to the car to get your vitamin supplement samples.
I'm always double or triple dipping. It's like, how can I
hustle
make the
it.
Most of this scene?
Let's see. I've been an avid bike racer for more than 20 years, but August has yet... I don't know what August is. I'm kind of jumping into
I think August is one of the kids' names, I think.
Oh. To inherit, but August has yet to inherit, oh, it must be his kid, my competitive instinct or passion for unadulterated speed. I guess he's talking about his own kid and whatnot. So he traveled to Fort Worth with his son August, apparently, to compete in this thing. Good Lord.
So this is funny. August's Nana doted over him, saying, "Here, boo," as she helped him guzzle a few yogurt smoothie samples. And she said, "Sugar doping," we joked. Jesus.
You know, I think this is a company called Strider that is using this. I've heard of these balance bikes, and I think...
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, yeah, and that's another sponsor, I guess.
Oh, Strider Cut Balance Bike Race. That's what these are. These are bikes. I actually saw this on TV. They're for little kids. They kind of are in lieu of training wheels. Like, the bike, like, balances itself. So I think Strider sponsors these, the Strider Balance Bike Company, and then they hold these for races for three-year-olds. Oh, my God. It's even more sordid than I thought it was. Of course, people participate in it, so.
Well, I think that's where we've gone as a society. It's constant competition. There's only a handful of winners in the world, and everyone else are losers.
Losers. That's right.
Losers.
You know what second place is?
And that's lost. coming from, it's reinforced by our good old president.
Yeah, Trump. Oh yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I'm a winner. Everyone else is a loser. Everyone can go F themselves.
Oh, here we go. This is a father talking to his son. "When you see someone in front of you, go faster and try to pass them," I heard one dad explain to his son, a kid adorned with a full face helmet and GoPro.
There you go. You got to record that.
A communal spirit prevailed over a competitive rivalry. That's BS. Give me a break. You got to stomp your competition into the ground. Not only do you have to win, you have to humiliate the other person.
Absolutely. There's only room for one winner. Everyone else, losers.
Oh, my God. Time, Pat, yes. I'm going so fast. Oh, and there he is. Looks like a kid named Ian hoisting his trophy. This is what parents spend their weekends doing. These things.
Yeah, I mean, you really, if you're showing up at one of these things and your kid's competing, you should be ashamed of yourself.
You know, it kind of reminds me, you remember the whole Joan Benet Ramsey case, all that.
Yes. Yep.
I think we were in college when that happened, or just out of college, something like that. It was still, yeah, I think it was probably 96, 97, 98, something like that. Just to remind our listeners, she's a girl, 8-year-old girl, I think. Maybe she was younger. And she was murdered. Her body was found in the house, and they never officially solved the case. Like, they never found out who did it. And the mother has since passed away. I don't know about the father. There was like a stepson or a somebody around. There was suspicions about him. But anyway, this girl competed. This is a little girl. She was like 4 or 5 years old in these movies. Remember she was in those competitions where they wore all that makeup? Yeah,
the beauty pageants.
Oh my God.
It's still, there's I think there's a reality TV show on about it right now. Not about John Benet Ramsey, but about the beauty pageant thing.
That is,
I think it's on like TLC or something.
That is freakish. Like dressing up little kids, and there's no like I remember they people really got on the parents about that. And I think the parents probably got a lot of bad press that maybe they didn't deserve, but that always rubbed me the wrong way, that they would have their kid looking like that. And it was just creepy. And you could see the weirdos that would attract, you know, to like,
oh, geez,
look at that stuff.
I mean,
it's gross. And somebody was comparing it to, like, you know, they said, well, there are talent shows for kids where you run or you know, they sing or whatever. Like, this was just oogling young girls. I mean, really young girls. Like, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, dressed up in these like very adult outfits. It was so weird.
Essentially sexualizing them.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I don't know what happened to the girl. No one knows. But I look at her parents, I'm like, forget everything that happened. Why would you have her involved in that? Like, why do you think that's appropriate? It's so creepy. Any parent who does that, it's like, Jesus, you know, weird stuff. Well, you know what's funny, though, about, like, this bike race? Like, I'm sure you did the same thing. I'm sure every kid who learned how to ride a bike, you and your friends would line up, and you'd always have races. You'd always, like, want to see who was the fastest. Like, we just did this stuff on our own. There was no need for Dannon's sponsorship or GoPro cameras and all this crap. Like, it's just, like, everything has to be so hyper-organized and sponsored. It's like, I don't know. It's just sort of not letting kids kind of just be kids, you know?
Yeah, and to think to you, it's like pimping your kids out with sponsorships.
I know.
At that age, it's just like,
I mean, I'm sure a lot of these parents are just like nice people, and they think this is kind of a fun thing for their kid. There's nothing like nefarious about it, but it's just odd. Like, I don't know. To me, it's like you sort of want the days where kids like, did stuff on their own. They organized things on their own, basketball, you know, baseball game, whatever it was, you know, and it's just sort of like, yeah, more of this, you know, again, like everything has to be so organized and sponsored and this and that, but such is life, John, such is life. There's my bit of wisdom to you. Oh, hold on. Before we transition into this next fascinating topic that we're going to dissect for our listening public. No offense to you, listening public, but John and I kind of, I think, guide you through these issues, right?
Well, I think it's attributed to the hundreds of hours of research we do prior to all these podcasts, as how well informed right. Matt and I are.
Right, exactly. Got to give a shout out to Big Time Tommy.
Yes, Big Time.
John sent me this link, and it is rare.
It was love at first sight.
It's
for
rare that I fall in love right, within 15 seconds. Big Time Tommy. You know what I love is every opening. How you doing, Instagram? How you doing, Instagram? And I don't know where he found that cigar. Good Lord, it's like a baseball bat.
It's the biggest cigar, and he is just a massive I mean, he is massive. He must be like over 300 pounds.
Yeah, I don't know how tall he is. I can't quite tell.
He doesn't look like a tall guy, but he's a big... He's
big.
And big. I grew up with guys like Big Time Tommy.
Oh,
like,
it seems like he could be your next door neighbor.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Big Time Tommy. And he's always got the thought of the day. Now, I think we can unreservedly, and he would embrace this, call him a Guido. He is a Guido.
Oh, yes. His thought of the day is Shakespearean.
Yes.
It is just a beautiful snippet of life.
Do what you want to do, all right? It's usually along those lines. Hey.
And he's basically... giving his thought of his day, why he's beating his chest because he's on the brink of a heart attack, and he's smoking that, like Matt said, essentially a baseball bat of a cigar.
Hey, I constantly. Want this guy on the podcast. I'm going to try.
We want him.
Contact Big Time Tommy. He had this. He's one of those guys. At first, I look at him. I'm like, whatever. I can't tell you how many of his posts I've watched. It's addictive. It's addictive. Yeah. And the big thing is old school, baby. Old school. And, or he'll say OS. OS. For life. That's it. OS for life.
Always.
He's got the big gold chains on. He's from Bayshore, Long Island, I think. Are you familiar with Bayshore?
Yes, I am very, very familiar with Bayshore.
Is this where Big Time Tommy would fit in?
Like a glove. Like a glove.
Well, I'm not sure where he's from. He references like Brooklyn, Queens, Bronx. He could be easily from any of those places or from Long Island. And did you see the one about the porch sitting? Stoop sitting. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't go for a deep dive like you did, Matt.
Treat yourself. He's sitting on the stoop of a house, I guess his, and he's like, Bronx quit summertime, sitting on the stoop. And he's got this big speaker blaring the worst club music you've ever heard in your life. And the different speakers are turning different colors.
Oh, I love it. I love it that we live in a world where Big Time Tommy exists.
And he gets one of those posts, something like 150,000 hits.
Oh, yeah. He is just a big, lovable bear.
How you doing, Instagram? And, oh, my favorite, because Big Time Tommy's schedule is packed. So he says, take it easy, which is short for take it easy.
You always have to take it easy.
But he doesn't go with he's got to also be, he just says, take it easy. And then he's out. Done. He's on to the next thing. He's a hustler.
He's hustling.
Is he a reality TV star?
No. But he could be.
No, I thought I had seen something where it said like reality TV actor or something. Like, I thought maybe he was on one of those shows, like as a...
Oh, it's possible he could have been on a reality TV show and just added it to his CR or his resume.
Hold on one second here. We have the magic of Google. I'm going to type in Big Time and Tommy. Oh, here we go. Big Time Tommy Romola. That's his name. Tommy Romola.
Great last name.
Let's see. An Instagram of pure greatness. I don't know if there's a Wikipedia on this guy. Oh, he has an IMDb. Oh, his DJ is Vinny Dice. Have you seen Vinny Dice?
No.
Oh, man. Okay, what it is, Big Time Tommy will go rolling into a club. And he'll be like, this is my Thursday night hanging out with DJ Vinny Dice. And Vinny Dice has his laptop set up, and he's cranking the tunes. And on the back of the laptop are two fuzzy dice, like, painted on there. With DJ Vinny Dice painted all.
Love it.
And he does posts with Vinny Dice. These two, I'm telling you, I just really want to get down there.
Big Time Tommy looks like he's working for Barstool Sports.
Yeah. Oh, Carfellas. I think that was a show. Yeah, yeah, okay. I think this is what he was on. This thing called Carfellas, which I think was like a reality show about cars. Yeah, there he is. So now he has morphed into... God damn it, they put these things... Oh, I can't continue reading this. So I guess what he was doing there morphed into Big Time Tommy. So there you go.
Well, I think from Big Time Tommy we can transition into the how Americans eat mostly junk food and snacks.
I think Big Time Tommy's probably had a few cupcakes in his lifetime, but is that
just a few?
Is that fair to say?
Just a few,
maybe.
I think Big Time Tommy, before the night before each day, he plans out what he's going to eat the next day.
Oh, I'm sure he's big on the lasagnas and
the pastas,
the capicole, and
the spaghetti and meatballs.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Remember those up in speaking of Italian stuff, Arthur Avenue in the Bronx is like a little piece of advice to our non-New York listeners. If you visit New York and you have time and you really want an authentic Italian experience, Arthur Avenue in the Bronx is, wouldn't you say, is the place to go as opposed to the Little Italy in Manhattan?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, it's amazing.
It's the best authentic Italian food you can get in the tri-state area.
And you will literally see the goats and the goats' heads in the shops of windows.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Rabbits. I mean, you'll see stuff that's like, you think it's like a display, like a tourist display, and it's not. Like, that's, they actually use that stuff. And why did I bring this up? They have these shops there that sell like specialty stuff, and there was this wheel of Parmesan cheese. I'm not kidding you. It was 4 feet across, 4 feet across, and probably 2 feet thick. It was massive. And just out of curiosity, I said to the guy behind the counter, like, could I buy that entire thing? And he said, yeah, if you wanted to. And I said, well, how much would it cost? And he said, well, it's $15.99 a pound, so however much it weighs. I mean, it would have come out to, over $2,000, something like that.
Oof, you should have bought
it. And I thought, I need that huge wheel of Parmesan cheese in the house. Just cutting off hunks. So I bet Big Time Tommy is a big fan of, like, cooking up massive meals of pastas and things like that. But this was more about just people snacking constantly on junk food and crap like that. Actually, there's a headline below it. It says, pressure cooker, why home cooking won't solve our problems and what we can do about it. I'm not really worried about solving my problems with home cooking. I don't know why anybody would think that, but in any event.
The article was essentially about how it's difficult to cook at home and to cook at home economically when, you're making minimum wage. The article referenced, a family that they all work at Wendy's, and they essentially, what they consume is just this processed snack food and then also fast food. And the article explains that, I guess, a cousin or a brother had just gotten out of prison. And to celebrate, the family went out and bought cupcake mix and made cupcakes to celebrate this guy getting out of prison. And then this reporter that followed these families and their buying habits and, what they purchase. And it's just all 100% processed, from the cookies, the cakes, the cupcakes, the food, the Doritos, and very little whole foods like chicken, steak, or vegetables and fruits. And that modern society is built around this snack culture. right? Because these huge multinational snack companies can make a lot of money if we're always grazing. You know, we're always, you know, stuffing another chocolate chip cookie into our gullets.
Well, I would say in general that it is cheaper and healthier to cook at home. If you do know what to buy, I mean, especially if you're buying for a family. And you do have to buy, you know, the fruits and the vegetables and all of that. But, I mean, I've always just thought, you know, and I've mentioned living in New York, it's so easy to order out or go out to eat. But it's expensive. Like, it's a lot. You can go to the grocery store and spend $20 if you spend it well. And you can feed yourself for 3 or 4 days. And you can cook yourself breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, make lunch
right,
for
work. If you know what you're doing.
Yeah, you buy, like, pasta, you buy rice, you look for stuff on sale, you know, you buy, you can buy in bulk, you know, if you have a family and whatnot. But, yeah, the constant eating and, like, just from a teacher's standpoint, I don't care if kids bring food into the classroom. I mean, I don't know what their schedules are like sometimes, but I never ate in a classroom. Like, when I was in high school, like, you just didn't do that. It was...
No. I think you would get in trouble if you had food in the classroom, right?
I think so. It was just sort of understood you didn't do that. Or if you tried to, you had to be very sneaky about it. And you were maybe eating some candy or something. Kids, they bring in huge boxes of Triscuits and you know, bagels and, you know, and sometimes they'd be like, do you mind if I eat this? And I'm like, no, it's all right.
And I'm sure Mr. Kerr comes by, has to pay the toll.
Just grab it in there.
Your big-ass greasy hand dives deep into that box and pulls out half the box.
That's right. Now, I will say this, that a lot of the kids do snack more healthy. Like, they'll bring carrots. You know, they'll eat Triscuits. They're not, like, shoving cupcakes in their mouth. And a lot of their parents, like, they'll kind of... not complain, but they'll be like, oh, my parents buy all whole wheat stuff. They buy all organic stuff. And I'm like, well, okay, at least they're making an effort. As opposed to, like, a lot of people who just... I just saw this thing on the news yesterday. It was talking about ultra-processed food and how some huge percentage of Americans, that's pretty much what they eat, is just like...
Yeah, no, it's... And then, you know, we wonder why... You know, when you look at the obesity numbers and the amount of Americans that are considered fat, it's laughably high.
Well, let me go back to the article we discussed, or the concept we discussed yesterday of having Burger King delivered to your car while you're sitting in traffic. That's what kind of drives me nuts about this
you
culture.
Don't, you don't have to move.
But we're constantly bombarded with messages to eat better. You're eating like crap. You're not eating good food. You got to exercise more. All these, you know, all this stuff on television about, you know, buying the Peloton bike and signing. And then people are having fast food delivered to their car. Like, it's like this endless cycle, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? And I'm going to tie this directly to work because this is the Working Experience podcast is, you know, if you're miserable, like if your whole existence is miserable and your job sucks, you might just throw in the towel.
Oh, sure.
You might just be like, this is my little bit of light in my day.
Oh,
this
I'm
is
sure
my happy time.
Lunch, for most people in the workplace, that is the highlight of their day. It's the only thing keeping them from walking out of the up like an upper floor window or something. You know, it's lunch. It's lunch.
Yeah, no, you're right. But, you know, that lunch, they could, you know, eat the fatty or the sugary or the salty food because, like you said, it's the highlight of their day and they want to treat themselves because the other 99% of their day, they're just being dumped on. Stuff that they don't want to do, meetings they don't want to attend, people they don't want to talk to.
Look at how excited, and you'll see this on Facebook, other social media, look at how excited people get for free donut day at Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, it's pathetic. It is really pathetic that people get that. There, my brother sent me a short article. He lives in Washington, D.C., and Krispy Kreme was giving out free donuts between, like, I don't know, 10 and 11 or something like that, some guy ended up getting arrested at the thing, getting into a melee to get his free donut. To get his, I don't know, what does a donut cost? 75 cents or a dollar?
Yeah, it was, like what, that. Did someone cut him online and he started throwing
Hail Marys? Something like that. Or he just flipped out or something. What I love here in this article, it says, many people are scarcely acquainted with the feeling of hunger anymore, Wilson writes. The new pattern is a series of solitary snacks that we often hardly notice or enjoy as they pass through our gullet. Just keep
that's a brilliant line. Brilliant line.
Just keep shoving it down, guy.
Well, it reminds me of that, what was that Pixar movie? Was it, remember that they were in the spaceship?
Yeah.
Oh, it was the robot one.
Yeah,
remember
yeah.
When, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, not, he picked up garbage.
Right, and like, so the
great
their
movie.
Home planet Earth was destroyed, and they were in this, you know, they're in this spaceship, and they didn't move. They had like these chairs that would bring them around, and everyone started to look like the, you know, Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yeah, yeah, they could barely like walk. They were unfamiliar with the concept.
That's where we're going.
Well, if you're in a job where, you know, you're just sitting at a desk all day and you can get up whenever you want and go over and get something to eat, chances are you probably will. You know, you'll just be eating. Like, I'm kind of locked into my classroom, so I don't have snacks in my room. I might have an orange and an apple, and I have water. And if I really am feeling famished, you know, I'll eat part of an orange or something like that. But I kind of like that aspect because I would be very tempted to want, because all the time people are putting out stuff in the break rooms like donuts and croissants and all this stuff. And I would be very tempted to grab one, grab two, you know, it's just like three munchkins or whatever. And pretty soon you're just, you know, you've consumed 2,000 calories of crap. So it must be hard if you work in an office, and especially these offices that put out these huge spreads every day. I mean, you know, you just want to eat.
Yeah, it's a free for all.
Yeah.
Because evolutionary speaking, is we're conditioned, like, if there's food, we're going to eat that food and then store it for later because we don't know if we're going to starve the next day.
There was,
you know,
a
sorry,
what was that?
No, I was going to say our ancestors, you know, it was tough to find and kill an animal to feed the tribe. So you'd find and kill the animal and then gorge yourself, and then you didn't know when you were going to eat next.
Well, you know, it's tough, too, for people who are really kind of hurting and are going to, like, food pantries because they just don't really have, sometimes they don't have very healthy food. I mean, it's tough to get you through, but, you know, and I'm sure people kind of feel, you know, they're not going to go to a food pantry when they need food and complain. But she makes good points here. Like, you can't buy in bulk at the supermarket if you don't have a car. Like, that's very difficult to do. Like, there's always these...
Right.
There was a great book called Nickeled and Dimed in America by Barbara... I want to say her last name is Ehrlichman. I don't think it is. And she, to write this book, she worked in minimum wage jobs. One in Florida, I think in Orlando, Portland, Maine, and then somewhere in the Midwest. And she just tried to exist on that. A job you could get with a high school diploma, basically. Cleaning motel rooms, cashiering, that kind of thing. And it was really telling. Like, when she went to get food stamps in, I think it was Portland at the time, you could not buy fresh fruit with the food stamps.
Wow.
Yeah. So she said, like, trying to eat healthy. And then, like, a lot of people are living in motel rooms. And if you live in a motel room, maybe you can get a hot plate, but you don't have a refrigerator usually. I mean, the types of motels she was staying in, you didn't. So you're spending a lot of money eating unhealthy food because you can't cook in the room. Like, again, some people would manage to hook up a hot plate or something, but you're not really supposed to do that. And if the management found out about it... Now, she was a single woman doing this. Imagine throwing kids into that mix.
Oh.
And trying to feed, and there were kids who lived at these motel complexes. Like, their parents worked. Sometimes they went to school, sometimes they didn't. So I'm glad she throws those things in there because in a lot of poor neighborhoods, you don't have a grocery store that's readily available. So you end up at those, like, corner stores, the bodegas or whatever, and you're paying, you know, through the nose for a can of tuna fish or something. And their stuff is kind of, you know, like, when I bought milk at those places, it spoils within a day. Like, it's just not quality stuff.
It's very sketchy.
Yeah, so... Yeah, she does raise some interesting points. And then on the other end of the scale, you have these people working in offices who are trying to get through the day on salt, sugar, and fat. So,
yeah, it's a little reward system, you know? It's a little bit of happiness in an otherwise dreary day.
Yeah. And even if the day is not terrible... You know, it's just, as you say, kind of dreary, monotonous. You want to break the routine. So, you know, you go down and get your free donut from Krispy Kreme and you crack someone in the face if they get your free donut.
Or you go down to Starbucks and you get a Frappuccino that's 1,500 calories and loaded with sugar and salt.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know. You drink it and you feel...
A little bit of mouth pleasure.
You feel better for, I don't know, 20 minutes, maybe a half hour, and then you want to go down to Starbucks again. And you end up, like, spending a lot of money and all that stuff. So, yeah, one piece of advice I heard, and it was from Kevin Smith, you know, the director?
Yes.
He has always been quite fat. I mean, he's lost weight and he's always been pretty fat. And then he finally had a heart attack. And he's still a pretty young guy. I mean, I think he's maybe in his late 40s, early 50s. And he had a heart attack. So the doctor said, look, you need a radical change of diet here. And so he started eating, like, vegan food. And, you know, fruits, vegetables, that was pretty much it. But he said he wanted to immediately lose about 20 pounds. He said, I just needed to get off of it. And so he just... would stop eating, like he would start fasting. And he said it's really hard because, like, you're really hungry and, like, it really starts to get you angry and frustrated. But he's like, your body can get used to that. Like, it just takes a period of time. It's almost like withdrawal. Like, you're trying to get off the sugar, trying to get off the salt, trying to break your bad habits. And
intermittent fasting works, where you know, there are different methods. You know, one is 10-hour, 16-hour, 20-hour. Sometimes people will eat normal for 5 days a week and then fast for 2 days. But it does work. But in the beginning, it's hard. If you're constantly feeding yourself, you know, you'll wake up in the morning, you're going to feel hungry. But like you said, your body will get accustomed to it. And you could, you know, you could limit your calorie intake, all that good stuff, and it does work.
But, you know, it's really sad. Like, these are such rich people problems. There are people who can't get enough to eat.
I know. And rich people are limiting the amount of food.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's... I think it's, to throw food out... I don't know. This was just the way I was brought up. It's just, like, you don't throw food out.
No, that's, you do not.
That's one of the things. And... as Americans, we're horrific. I think we throw out enough food to feed the entire world. Yeah, it's just, it's insane.
I know.
So for me, I will swoop. I'm literally like the human garbage can. I will eat, unless my boys are eating something absolutely disgusting, I just can't do it. But I'll try to save it and have them eat it for leftovers. We limit the amount of food that we actually throw out.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that, it's a lot of Americans that just go to a restaurant, order, eat half of it, and throw the rest out.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. You know, there was a guy, just to kind of wrap us up here, I heard about him before Easter. It was Lent was starting. And, you know, during Lent, people generally give up something. So he, I think he was some sort of medieval scholar, and these monks would live on beer for the entire month of Lent. So that's what he decided to do. He was just going to drink...
Just beer?
Craft beer. And I remember hearing about him at the beginning of Lent. Then I read about him just a couple of days ago. He claims he lost 44 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, he didn't eat any food. Now, I don't know how the beer factored into his day-to-day routine, but I don't imagine he was, like, drinking when he got up in the morning or anything. But I guess he just wouldn't eat anything. And he said, yeah, your body can go for a long time without eating food. And he said the first week was terrible, like, not eating. Like, he said you're almost like, you know, it was like a heroin withdrawal. You're just, all you can think about is eating. But then, like, you calm down and your system gets used to it. So, I mean, now the trick is not putting all that weight back on. Because that's usually
That's the trick. Yeah. I think that's, you know, going back to Kevin Smith, didn't he go on just eating potatoes?
Potatoes.
Right, to lose weight?
Yeah.
And he's like, you could eat as many potatoes or as much potatoes as you want, but you could, that's all you could eat.
Yeah.
Was potatoes. And he dropped like a lot of weight, right?
He said within the first like 2 weeks, he dropped like 15 pounds.
Wow.
I would imagine you just don't want to eat anymore. Like, you just don't, you know. I've heard if you're trying to diet, like, eating the same thing, like, as long as you cut down. But if you have, like, a ham and cheese sandwich at lunch, and you have that every single day, you don't want anything else. And you don't want another ham and cheese sandwich. Like, you just...
Yeah, you get sick of it.
Yeah, you get tired of it. You're full. Like, you eat till you're full. And I always liked Louis C.K. line, his line about his doctor. He's always talking about how fat he is. And I mean, he's not that fat. He's a little chunky. But his doctor said, well, at what point in the meal are you full and you stop eating? And he's like, I don't stop eating when I'm full. I stop eating when I hate myself. I stop eating when I'm like, oh God, get that away from me.
I think I'm going to throw up.
Yeah, that's usually, I mean, I remember being like 20 years old and even a little older, and I would eat myself. I would already feel bad, and I had to eat another slice of pizza because it was there, because I had to do it.
That's still my mentality. I don't stop eating when I'm full.
No.
Like, who does that?
Yeah, I know. Probably people without enough food to eat. Yeah, that was interesting. He said that to Joe Rogan. He said some guy told him, you can't have butter or salt or anything. They could just be plain potatoes. That was it. And he said it
was
like,
which is brutal.
Yeah, and he said it was like a natural diuretic. So you end up pissing a lot of weight out, which a lot of it was water weight. So, I don't know. He had lost a lot of weight. I saw him on the show. He was, like, slimmer than I've ever seen him. But that doesn't always equate to health. But I think he was really in a crisis. Well, he was in a crisis. He had a heart attack, for crying out loud. So, well, you remember Brendan Singleton, right?
Yes.
He lost over 100 pounds.
Really?
Yeah. This was several years ago. I hadn't seen him in a while, and he was a smoker too. And he was up he was up to like 325. He was very,
whoa,
very
Jesus.
Big. Yeah. And his doctor finally said, look, you have to do something. And so he just Brendan is very understated. He's a really good guy. He said what he did was he had a whole DVD series of some show he liked. So he would go down in the basement, sit on the exercise cycle, and he would watch a half hour. And he would do the exercise bike. And then he cut way down on what he was eating, which was evident. Like when we went out to eat, he ordered a lot less than he used to. He had lost over 100 pounds doing that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And he kept it off. I haven't seen him in a while, but I saw him a couple of years after that. He had kept the weight off. Like, he looked good. He looked great. I mean, he said he felt great. You know, he doesn't smoke anymore. I mean, he stopped smoking and lost that weight.
Wow, that's impressive.
I told him, you should go on Oprah Winfrey. Like, no dietary crap, no none of that, no personal trainer, gym membership or anything.
It's just hard work and consistency.
And it took him like a year. It took him about a year to lose it. And it's like, yeah.
And that's the best way to lose it.
Now, I think it's to stop eating, right? Lose 20 pounds and then be like, yes, I can eat again and start cramming it back on.
Well, we're going to, here on the Working Experience, we're coming out with a shake and a pill that will guarantee that you will drop 30 pounds.
The shake and the pill make everything we've said moot, because you can eat anything you want, whenever you want, and exercise never. Pill and shake, yes, and you're good to go. Done. Now, let me put a disclaimer. Your kidneys and liver are going to fail after about 6 months.
That's the fine print.
Yeah,
that's the small print.
I like to put that under the neither here nor there category.
Right.
All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening to our ill-considered advice on how to live a healthy life. I hope you got a lot out of it. Maybe at least a little entertainment.
Yes. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Working Experience.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Working Experience. We'd like to thank our sponsors, One Circle Media and the Still Believe app, the only app that delivers video proof of the Tooth Fairy and Santa by simply taking a picture. Download the app at stillbelieve.co today and amaze your kids. And if you work for a studio, network, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain your audience, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I would love to hear from you. And that's it. The end. The sweet end. Until our next audio encounter.